And welcome into You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archive shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's what we do at Veritas Medical. Again, check out that website, VeritasMedical.com. And let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir. Hope you're having a great week.
Good morning, Wade. So far, so good. How about you?
Oh, yeah. Well, happy Halloween. Here we are, and so I know you're going to eat about 5 pounds of candy.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on just what the heck is Halloween. I mean, we need to be focused.
Reese's Pieces or something.
That's, you know, every now and then you need to stress the body in a good way. But 4 pounds of sugar in one day—that's probably a little too much stress.
Isn't that a crazy stat?
Yeah.
I mean, four cups of sugar.
I mean, what are we even celebrating, anyways? On that day?
It's some pagan holiday. I don't know.
Yeah.
But still, I put it in my top three of the most fun.
Well, all that being said, we're going to move on to something more educational.
Absolutely.
Excuse me. But first, announcements. First Tuesday Talk, tomorrow night, November 1st, 7 p.m. at the Underwood Building, which is right next door to Veritas Medical. And will also be live streamed. That Zoom link should be working this time. Sorry about last time, guys. And the recording is up on Rumble, Veritas Medical Rumble channel. All the last few months of First Tuesday Talks, if you want to go see those. This week we're going to be talking about conventional treatment versus integrative treatment versus kingdom medicine, and do things outside the natural impact the natural. Is there even such a thing as supernatural? If it is, if there is, then does it impact your natural? Can we affect our physical health by our thinking, for instance? And also try to just explain more that it's usually not either or. It's usually all the above. You work in the physical and you work in the spiritual. We're body, soul, and spirit. Or are we? And that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow night, 7 p.m., Underwood, Cotton Exchange Building. Next announcement, we are revamping some things on the website. Kind of a slow, soft opening this week of some things. We're transitioning into a PMA, Private Membership Association, which just is an organizational structure that affords us a little more protection from some folks who don't have the same belief system as us, or as me. And many of us, many of my patients, and what I'm talking about is the likes of Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, and Yuval Noah Harari. And we're not going to get into all that today. We will maybe tomorrow night some. But these guys are very influential in the policy making decisions around the whole world, but even down to the local level. And that affects me, my family, my patients, my staff, and the community. And so if there's a way we can put another layer of lawful protection, then we need to do that so that we can have the freedom to associate and speak and support each other and love each other the way my belief system says we need to. Because I believe we're supposed to love God with all our heart, mind, and soul and love our neighbor as ourselves. And so if there's things that these other guys are doing that impede that, and there's a way to allow us to walk in our faith the way we want to, we need to do that. And so a PMA helps us to do that. I'll talk more about that on another show, though, and I'll put a video out there to explain that. But just so you know, the website is a little different today for those who have been in the education plan or the supplement club. You are grandfathered in, so don't worry. And we sent the email out, so go check your email if you didn't see that email. It explains everything. All right, so we had Angie with us a few weeks ago. How long has it been now, Angie?
2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks talking about her experience. She gave her testimony of being sick for a very long time, 30 years plus. So if y'all missed that show, go back and listen. I saw someone just on Friday with a similar story, not 30 years, but about 12 years. And actually thought about you and thought about your... the road you traveled to get diagnosed and then get better. And I know we've had a number of people call or email and ask some questions on mold in particular, which we'll get into that. But also want to remind folks, this is more than just mold. There's other biotoxins. There's other things that can trigger your body to go into this chronic inflammatory response syndrome. And just this wild, out of control, like a brush fire of inflammation. And if that's going on in you, you can be very symptomatic, and it can be very difficult for a doctor to diagnose, because a lot of blood work and the standard blood work is normal. I heard Jimmy and Wade talking on the show before ours about get your blood work routinely so you know your hormone levels, you know your sugar levels and all these different things. And I agree. We get blood work on people all the time. However, the blood work, it's just a snapshot of that one moment in time of what's floating around in your bloodstream. And the bloodstream is just a transport vehicle, basically moving things from one part of the body to the other part of the body. So it doesn't always give a complete picture as far as what's happening inside your cells, inside your neurons, inside your heart muscle cells, your kidney cells, your immune system cells. And then there is some blood work that does give us more information, like the chronic inflammatory response syndrome we're going to talk about today, but it's not on routine blood work. And very few doctors even know what this blood work is. If you showed it to them, they would look at you like, who are you and where did you get this from? What is this? Believe me, because I was there. And partly still am there. I sure don't know everything. There are doctors who have dedicated their entire career to just dealing with CIRCs, which is CIRS, that's the acronym for chronic inflammatory response syndrome. You'll hear us today, Angie and I, talking about CIRCs, and that's what we're talking about. But there's specific blood work for that. And just before we went on air, Angie was commenting, I'll let her maybe lead in with this, about testosterone. I mean, it's clear a lot of guys and gals, too, females have testosterone. And when those levels are optimized, you can feel better. Better energy, better brain clarity, better ability to retain muscle mass and decrease insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome and sleep better and just function better, feel better. But, there's always the but, if you have an inflammatory response happening, then just treating with testosterone replacement, there could be some negative unintended consequences with that. So, Angie, I might let you lead in with that, and then we'll jump back and start, maybe a little recap, and then we'll dive into diagnostics and other things. But talk to the listeners about that in particular with the testosterone. What happens if you're chronically inflamed and start taking testosterone?
Yeah, that's a great question. And CIRS, chronic inflammatory response syndrome, is this multi-system, multi-symptom illness that's associated with exposure to biotoxins or neurotoxins. Probably the most common one is from mold, but could also be from a brown recluse spider bite, could be from ticks, could be from other biotoxins, dinoflagellates and other things.
Root canals.
Yes, all kinds of things that can cause this chronic inflammatory state. And there is a genetic susceptibility. It's estimated about 24% of the population has the genetic susceptibility for CIRS, which is why when I first met with my CIRS practitioner, he made the statement that everyone should be screened for CIRS. And I really understand that now, because I don't think it's a matter of if we're ever exposed to biotoxins, it's when. Mm-hmm. I think anyone living in the modern world is going to be exposed to a water-damaged building at some point in their life. We live and work and function in buildings that have pipes, and we have indoor plumbing, and there's all kinds of opportunities for water to leak and damage mm-hmm. a building, which causes this toxic stew of toxins mm-hmm. in that environment that people can be exposed to. And those of us who are genetically susceptible can go down this pathway, this really complex biochemical pathway, that triggers lots of inflammatory responses, and one of those is disrupting hormones, and mentioned testosterone as being one of those. And what happens with those of us with CIRS, there's some, and I don't know exactly the metabolic pathways and mechanisms, but there's a disruption in the enzymatic pathways. If someone then has low testosterone and they take testosterone or use it as a supplement or however it's prescribed, that testosterone can be converted into estrogen. So then it can trigger an excess of estrogen, which leads to other symptoms and still have that low testosterone. So treating this is really complicated and complex, mm-hmm. and there are some nuanced things with people with SIRS that wouldn't apply necessarily to the rest of the population.
Right. And this is so tricky. Like, it can manifest as even just weight loss resistance. I mean, people are trying so hard on their diet and eating low carb and intermittent fasting and exercising like crazy, and they're just stuck or gaining weight, actually. Mm-hmm. And same thing. There's so much hormonal involvement with metabolism. If you're chronically inflamed, it can affect not only testosterone, estrogen, the insulin, the cortisol, adrenaline, just all the hormones that impact metabolism. And that this is why we try to focus so much on inflammation. And if we can find the root cause of it or what's the trigger of it, and there's a lot of different things, but these biotoxins are one. So I'm trying to think where we left off on the last radio show, and I think it was the questions that were coming in to me were more based on, okay, I'm convinced that this could be an issue and could be affecting me. Mm-hmm. How do I go about confirming that? Is that about mm-hmm. where you were going to take it?
Yes, I think so too. I think we really just scratched the surface last time on mm-hmm. what SIRS is, and it's such a life-altering diagnosis. I think it's kind of important to go into more detail about what it is, how to diagnose it, how to treat it, and kind of what's the maintenance, I guess, for moving forward. Because there's really two parts of it. There's the health aspect of it, and there's the environmental aspect of it, especially if mold is the trigger for what's causing the symptoms. And like you said, there's kind of two telltale signs for SIRS: medically unexplained symptoms and symptoms that don't respond to normal treatment. And there's...
So that right there, if you've gone however many years and you have those two things, you're not responding to the treatment's been offered, conventional or especially integrative, I would say. Because a lot of folks come in from a conventional doctor and they're just not seeing results, so they see an integrative or functional guy and finally address the diet and lifestyle. And a lot of times that will clean folks up pretty rapidly, a lot of times. So if that doesn't even do it, all this, you start to really have to have the antennas up on, okay, could we be dealing with SIRS?
I think a good place to start is looking at a symptom questionnaire, just a checklist. This is a really long list of about 30 different symptoms that Dr. Shoemaker, who came up with the Shoemaker Protocol, has classified and grouped into really 13 different clusters of symptoms. But I think it's helpful if I just take a minute and go through mm-hmm. that list just yeah. so people can see the variety of symptoms. And in general, the more symptoms someone has, the more likely SIRS is a factor. But this is pretty comprehensive. Fatigue, weakness, aches, headache, light sensitivity, decreased assimilation of new knowledge, memory impairment, decreased word finding, difficulty concentrating, joint pain, morning stiffness, cramps, unusual skin sensitivity, tingling, shortness of breath, sinus congestion, cough, excessive thirst, confusion, appetite swings or loss of appetite, difficulty regulating body temperature, increased urinary frequency, red eyes, blurred vision, night sweats or sweats at other times of the day, primarily at night, mood swings, ice pick pain, diarrhea, numbness, abdominal pain or acid reflux, tearing of the eyes, disorientation, metallic taste, static shocks, vertigo, asthma, and tremors. So it's a pretty extensive list, and you can see that's multiple symptoms and multiple systems involved. And if someone goes through that checklist and it's pretty confirming, yes, this is looking like that might be what's going on. There's also the visual contrast screening test, which is on the Surviving Mold website. It's about $15 to do it online. It's quick and easy, takes about 15 minutes. And with those two things confirming with the visual contrast screening and just the symptom checklist, it's about 98% confirming that SIRS is what's...
Is there a grading system on that symptom checklist, like if you have 5 out of the 30, 10 out of the 30, or whatever?
It's grouped into clusters. So, for example, fatigue is a cluster all by itself. There's another cluster that is joint pain, morning stiffness, and cramps. So if anyone has any of those symptoms within that cluster, that's confirming for that cluster.
Okay.
There's about 13 different clusters, and I think it's someone has 8 out of the 13 clusters positive, that's confirming.
Okay.
For SIRS.
And again, for the listeners, you know, this isn't just anybody that wakes up with some red eyes one day. You know, that can be pink eye or allergies or whatever. These are folks that this has been an ongoing and chronic thing, and it's not responding to other treatments, and they're unexplained. So you have these multiple symptoms, these different clusters, have had them for a while. You've tried various treatment things. They don't work. And symptoms just keep progressing, getting worse, and new symptoms keep coming. So I just don't want everyone to think, oh, if I have joint pain, I need to run and go look for mold. No, you know, keep the perspective. Mm-hmm. But for those out there that have been trying to steward their health, have been trying to address some things, have been going to the doctor, going to the, you know, even the nutritionist or integrative guys, and you're having these type cluster symptoms, and then the visual contrast study that you can do at survivingmold.com. Is that questionnaire on survivingmold.com?
It is, yes.
Okay. So survivingmold.com is Dr. Richie Shoemaker's site, and we talked about him last show. We won't go into that, but he's basically the godfather of mold. He's the one that has really blazed the trail as far as figuring out this sick building syndrome. These water damaged buildings and mold exposure can create chronic inflammatory symptoms. So y'all can check out that website for more. So say someone has those clusters, 8 out of 13 clusters, the visual contrast study was positive for neurotoxins. Mm-hmm. What's the next step?
Blood work. Lots of different blood work and variations, and these are not the standard blood work. One of those really only needs to be tested once, and this is the one that's really screening people to see if they're susceptible to mold, and that's the genetic test, and it's the HLA genes. And it does help to have someone who's knowledgeable interpret the results, because there's different genetic variability within that gene combination. So some of the markers on that genetic test is showing that someone may be susceptible to mold, some may be susceptible to Lyme, some may be susceptible to dinoflagellates and other things, and then there's some that are susceptible to multiple things. So there's kind of that genetic indication that, mm-hmm. yes, this person's susceptible. And most people who are sick from SIRS have that genetic susceptibility. In addition to all of that, there's lots of different inflammatory markers to test and hormones to test. There's lots of acronyms on here, ADH, antidiuretic hormone, MSH, VIP, MMP9, VEGF, all kinds of different markers, plus some other hormonal markers, the cortisol, progesterone, testosterone, we already mentioned.
Do the SIRS practitioners typically get all those, or if there's maybe financial constraints, or there's one or two or three that seem to be more predictive or more likely to be positive, or do you really need to kind of do the broad brush and check all the things?
I think they all need to be checked initially just to see where someone is,
mm-hmm.
because the treatment protocol then pathway depends on which markers are out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So once all those are checked initially, a lot of those won't need to be checked again because if, for example, the genetic screening, that doesn't need checked again because your genes don't change.
Yeah.
But then the other markers, if they're within range and they're normal, those don't need to be checked again. So then the follow-ups will just be checking what's out of range and checking with progress through treatment. But actually that visual contrast screening test online is a cheap and easy way to check progress because
mm-hmm.
once you're recovering from the toxin exposure, that visual contrast test is going to improve.
Okay. Did you find in your experience that insurance covered the blood work?
Every policy is different, but my insurance did cover all of my blood work.
Okay.
And if you're paying out of pocket or insurance doesn't cover that or only covers a part, it probably can be expensive initially. But if your insurance covers it, that's great because that there's so many other things with SIRS that are expensive. It's nice if
right.
insurance will at least cover the blood work.
Yep.
There is an additional MRI that's checking the brain that's called a neuroquant. And it isn't necessary, but it is helpful because exposure to these toxins does help the brain, does affect the brain, so that neuroquant does show which regions of the brain are affected and how. And the brain can be treated. That is kind of encouraging too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like what we used to think 20 years ago that the brain is stagnant, never changes, but it can
mm-hmm.
Recover from things. So it can be addressed, especially if someone's having some neurological issues, some of the memory issues and other things. And even if someone's been diagnosed with dementia, this could be a factor, and that's a good test to see what parts of the brain are being affected. So once that's diagnosed and it's confirmed, yes, SIRS is what's happening, then it's a matter of identifying the treatment protocol. And the Shoemaker protocol is, I like how he kind of illustrates it in a pyramid, where you start at the base of the pyramid and work your way up in each step. And there's kind of three, I guess the big picture is there's three approaches and three steps to the treatment. And it's kind of the big picture simplified overview, and then we can get into the nuanced details because applying it's a little more complicated. First is remove the exposure. We have to get out of whatever that toxic exposure is, whether it's mold, whether it's the Lyme, whatever. The toxin exposure has to be removed.
Before you go to the next one, or maybe this is for later, you can say, but identifying that, I mean, how do you know there's mold in your house or wherever you're at? Do you want to go into that now or later?
We can go into that later if you want.
Okay, all right.
See the big picture first.
Yep. So remove the source.
Remove the source, which is sometimes complicated, but
yep.
Remove the source, remove the toxins from the body,
mm-hmm.
and then address the specific biomarkers that are out of balance.
Mm-hmm. So basically trying to encourage or not manipulate, but sort of manipulate the immune system to sort of get back in check, because these markers we're talking about that are out of range, that's just an indication the immune system's on fire, basically spitting out a lot of stuff. And so that part of the protocol would be basically to, I mean, the immune system might eventually calm itself down, but there's things you can do to speed that up once you remove the exposure.
And if someone's in a brand new exposure, they haven't had a lot of hits, haven't been inflamed, it's just they just suddenly had this exposure, they might be able to do this first two things and be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Remove the exposure and remove the toxins from the body, and that might be enough for the body to heal and repair itself.
Yeah.
But once that intense inflammatory process starts in a lot of us, especially if it's been a long time, that fire has been going on for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't go out on its own. We
mm-hmm.
have to do things to address it, and it does get a little complicated, so we do need to address those, and it doesn't fix itself.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to make, everybody has to make sure they're removing the exposure and removing the toxins from the body, because the majority of those symptoms we went through are a result of the inflammatory process. It's
right.
just collateral damage.
Yep.
The immune system trying to respond to this toxin that it can't remove.
Right. Okay, this might be a good break time. That was a good overview as far as the big three on what do we do about it. Remove the environmental toxin. Your ongoing exposure has got to be eliminated. Then the toxin that's in you, help it to get out by some detoxification and binding methods that we can get into some. And thirdly, get that immune response, that fire, to calm down a little faster. And there's different protocols for that. So that's the big picture. When we get back from the break, we'll dive into a little more of the detail about this. And also, we'll talk some about these CERS practitioners who have dedicated their entire career. It's all they do, all day, every day. And it might be a good idea to reach out to one of these guys or gals, because there's a lot of nuances to this for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll be right back. Y'all stick with us. I am Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
Welcome back into You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archive shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's what we do at Veritas Medical. Check out that website, VeritasMedical.com.
All right, we are back. Just another reminder, First Tuesday Talk tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at the Underwood Building next to Veritas Medical at 1320 Texas Avenue. We'll be talking conventional treatment, integrative treatment, and kingdom medicine. And does your thinking impact your physical? Is there such thing as supernatural? Also, just ask that our members bear with us. Be patient this week as we transition into this PMA, Private Membership Association, at least on the education side, the wellness side, the store, all the non-medical stuff, moving into the private. As we work through that, just be patient with us. There's a lot to do there, but we're doing it for your benefit. I'm trying to help untangle us from this web of bondage that's been brought on us. I mean, what really triggered me into this, and I know we got focused on our topic today, but I mean, it upsets me that I have to tell cancer patients, you know, here's the National Cancer Institute's 5-year survival rates on stage 4, breast, colon, prostate, and here's Hope for Cancer, Dr. Jimenez in Tijuana in Cancun, which are way better. But, you know, sorry, we can't do that here. Why can't we do that here? Well, there's these regulations in place, and that's just a whole other story, but we have been entangled in this huge web of bondage, and there's ways to untangle. And so we're looking into how to do that. But today's topic, let's untangle ourselves from these biotoxins, neurotoxins. This is toxins that molds release, Lyme, which is a bacteria usually introduced through a tick bite. There can be anaerobic bacteria growing at the base of your root canal. Not can there be, there almost always is. And they secrete neurotoxins, biotoxins that can affect the immune system. So lots of different potential biotoxins out there. And if you've been sick for many years, doctors can't seem to get a handle on it. You're getting worse despite all your efforts. You might consider this. So before the break, the big three on the treatment plan was first, remove the source. So remove the mold or the root canal or whatever. Then remove the toxin that's stuck in your body. And then try to encourage the immune system's overactive response to calm down. So, Angie, let's just jump right into there. What would the first thing be? And during the break, Wade mentioned that he had a leak in his house. Because we are in West Texas, it's dry. People don't think about mold, but it does rain. And a leaky roof can happen. And everyone has indoor plumbing, like you mentioned. And those leaks can happen behind the sheetrock, and you not know it. You know, HVAC systems that aren't properly installed, like we mentioned on the last show. I had a patient. Her home was a year and a half old, brand new, here in Lubbock. And it was full of mold. So it is an issue, even though we're in the desert, kind of, or dry climate. And, you know, most folks may just call up a local whoever company that says they test for mold, and they come in and do some air testing or something, and then say, oh, yeah, just throw a little bleach on that, or something like that. So let's dive into what do you do if you've done your own screening, your personal screening, your blood screening, it looks like this is you, removing that source. What's the first step?
Yeah, that's the challenge, is we kind of have to become detective and figure out where was the exposure, when, how, and so forth. And if we suspect that the exposure is in our home, that's a place we have control over, so we can do some testing. There is no perfect test. That's what's a little challenging about it. Some people will do like plate testing and test, you know, find what spores will land on a plate and grow it. Others might do air testing, and there's pros and cons to all of those. But the one that my surge practitioner recommended is called a HERTMSI test, H-E-R-T-M-S-I, which...
And that's on survivingmold.com. I looked that up this weekend. And basically it's a test on the dust. And when Angie was just saying plates, these are auger plates. That's one way to test. You can put these auger plates out for a certain number of hours or days, I don't remember, and then you send them off and the lab lets them grow for a few days, and then they report back pros and cons to that, pros and cons to testing the air. This hurts me.
Mm-hmm. It stands for Health Effects Roster of Type Specific Mycotoxins and Inflammatogens Test. That's why there's an acronym.
Yeah. Hurts me. All right.
Yeah, because mold hurts me.
Yeah.
And that is it's a dust test. It's actually a genetic test. Let me backtrack a second. Active mold growth will produce spores. And those spores can be airborne and spread throughout an environment. And there can also be fragments of molds or pieces of molds. And those can be just as harmful, if not more harmful, to those who are sensitive because they still produce mycotoxins. So they can be in the air, they get trapped in dust, and throughout the home. So people then can respond to that. So this HERTMSI test, it's a fairly easy test. It's a dust sample test where you use a plain Swiffer cloth and just collect dust samples throughout the house and send it to a lab. There's one in particular, it's in Texas, EnviroBiomics, EnviroBiomics. The test cost about $130, if I'm not mistaken. And this is a fairly simplified ERMI test because it's only testing and screening for the five most common molds that people are health sensitive and responsive to that cause the most health impact. So you send that away, it comes back with a score, and it's evaluating how much of each one of those molds are present and gives you an overall score. And this is based on the health effects. It's not whether this is a safer environment, whatever. It's just how it's affecting the health of individuals in that building.
Yeah, because, a lot of people say, well, there's mold everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, these tests will show up positive. But so this one, there's a gradient or scoring,
mm-hmm.
and the higher the score, the more likely it is to have a health effect on you, especially if you're genetically susceptible.
But the downside of this test is it doesn't tell you where the source is. So then if it comes back as being problematic, then it's finding the source. So then you're playing detective and trying to identify, was there a leak? Where was it? And hopefully you're not tearing down walls and doing things, mm-hmm. but you're trying to identify where's that source.
Right.
And to find it can be a little challenging, but if it is in the home, sorry to jump around a little, there's really two solutions, remediation or move.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that those are not easy things to address, especially when someone's really sick and struggling mm-hmm. to not only cognitively function, but have the energy to deal with all of this. But the person who's sick shouldn't be doing the DIY things because they can be making themselves worse.
Yeah.
And like we're saying at the break, you think, oh, yeah, I see where it is. Let's go spray bleach all over it. That can actually be counterproductive and can actually make someone worse. If you just go in with a kill mentality and just spray bleach all over it, that's actually breaking apart the molds and the spores into smaller fragments, making them airborne, and they get deeper into the lungs, and especially if those who are sensitive, it can make them worse.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of have to tread lightly and use some discernment and about how to address the problem, whether it's remediation or moving, and if remediation is warranted or decided. It just depends on the circumstances of what's better for mm-hmm. those involved. Finding someone who is knowledgeable about the health impacts of mold is really crucial, because if they don't understand that, they could come in and potentially make the situation worse for those who are sick.
Mm-hmm.
If moving is warranted, and so that's just determining, you know, everyone has to decide for themselves what's the best in their situation, then it's finding a safe environment to move to. So that's going back and maybe doing that Hurts Me test in the new home to make sure it's okay. And then being careful about the possessions that are being moved into the new place, because you don't want to take possessions and furniture and things from a moldy home, move it into a new clean home, and contaminate that new home and just start all over again. So we kind of have to be careful and discriminating about what's being moved. And there's a few things we can do with our possessions if we're moving in particular. There's kind of three difficult materials that, if it is in a really moldy environment, that might not be safe to move. And unfortunately, some of these are expensive things. Mattresses and box springs, you really can't remediate those. Upholstered furniture, also really problematic. And rugs. Those are all things that you really can't adequately remediate. Other things probably are okay. Washable materials, clothing, bedding, towels, sheets, things like that can be washed in borax, and that will remove the mold. As long as there's no physical mold growing in the fabrics, those can't be saved. But if it's just been in a moldy home and there might be mycotoxins in and on that fabric, that can be washed in borax. Solid surface things, wood furniture, appliances, metal things, you can use a 10% alcohol solution. You can use Everclear, vodka, whatever, mix it with distilled water, make a 10% solution, spray that and wipe it down with a microfiber cloth. That microfiber, because mold spores are sticky and they stick to the surfaces, so that alcohol solution will remove that layer, and then wipe it with a microfiber cloth and make sure it's dry, and that will remove those materials, and then the microfiber cloths can then be washed in borax and reused. So that would clean those materials before they're moved into a new home.
What about air filtration? Are there good air filters that might clean the air for you?
Yeah, I think that's really important too, just as a maintenance thing, is to use a good air filter. There's the Air Doctor, was Air Oasis, I think is another one. Just a good HEPA filter that's removing those airborne materials that are causing inflammation and affecting people who are sensitive.
Right. Okay, so if we've identified it, remediated, or moved, and we feel like we're not having ongoing exposure anymore, let's touch on getting the toxin. It's because these toxins can set up shop in you and just settle in different places in the body. How do we remove them?
The primary way that Dr. Shoemaker found in his protocols is using a particular binder that used to be an old cholesterol-lowering medication. It is a prescription called cholestyramine that can physically bond to toxins so that they can be removed through the digestive tract. The challenge in that protocol is it's using that medication four times a day, and it needs to be taken away from other supplements, medications, or food because it can bind to those nutrients and materials too. So spacing it is a little bit of a challenge. But that's the one that he primarily found as being effective in clearing out and removing the toxins. there may be some other supplement, kind of over-the-counter type binders that could be helpful. Bentonite clay, some charcoal, some combination binders, zeolites, pectins, apple pectins, and so forth. Usually a combination is probably better because each toxin is going to have a different binding capacity to different binders.
Let me just interject, because someone might say, well, my body's going to excrete this on its own. And yes, the body's designed to excrete these things. But when it's a compromised body, and if it's overwhelmed with toxicity, yeah, the liver will do all it can to dump this to the bile, and the bile into the intestine to the toilet. But as it travels down the intestine, you can actually reabsorb some of this, and that's where the binders are doing the work. It's in the gut. They act like a sponge, soak up these toxins, hold on to them, stay in the gut, and move to the toilet. So you avoid the reabsorption, and then it just helps speed the whole process up. And as Angie mentioned at the beginning, you could, you know, maybe get over this on your own just by removing that source, but usually that's early on, and the body's still pretty strong and well-equipped to do that detoxification. You're 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road, you're probably going to need the help. So the binders are a big deal. Did you have more to say on binders, or we want to go to the management of the immune system?
No, I had one more thought about remediating possessions, because it's overwhelming.
It's tough.
It really is. And
I mean, I've heard of folks practically burning everything.
Yeah.
I mean, one book I read, this lady walked out of her house basically in her underwear.
Yeah.
Got a brand new pair of underwear, had it on her porch, went outside, changed, walked out, and left everything. That sounds extreme, you know, but
I understand the desperation that people feel when they know, once you know, and you know, then it is life-altering, and then you just want to get out of the exposure and feel better. I mean, I've heard of people basically pitching a tent in their backyard because they know their house is bothering them and it's making them sick, and they can't afford to do anything about it. Mm. And when you're desperate to feel better and you know what the source of the toxin is, you just want to get away.
Mm-hmm.
But it is challenging. And if there are possessions that are sentimental, or you just don't have the time, effort, finances, energy, mind, focus to deal with it and know what to do, what I found was really fascinating is trash bags are sterile inside. You can take whatever it is that you're not sure about or don't have time to address, and as long as it's dry, put it inside a trash bag, seal it up, and put it in a corner and put it somewhere until you have time, effort, energy, resources to deal with it.
Mm.
And then when you are ready to deal with it, take it outside. Don't do it inside because you don't want to contaminate your environment. Plus, you want to diffuse any kind of toxins that you're exposed to, and address it while it's outside.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can be a little more discerning about what to keep and what not to, and make sure you do those things. If it's washable, borax. If it's a non-porous substance, then you can wipe it down.
Right. Does ozone come into play anywhere environmentally? Have people, because I know some remediation, more smoke, you know, remediation of smoke damage. They'll put an ozone generator in the house. You leave the house because you don't need to breathe in ozone. But
right.
Is that, has Shoemaker, anybody talked about that?
Not to my knowledge. I'm not as familiar with how that could affect, because I know there's so many things that for most people would be fine, but there's nuance with SIRS, like the testosterone thing, that there's a nuance in terms of treatment and how it can affect people. Cause
I was thinking, get a home ozone generator and pop a tube into that trash bag, just blow it up with ozone, let the ozone treat that toxin. That thought just came to mind, but no, we don't need to diverge onto that topic, because we're almost done. Wade, how many more minutes we got here?
About 10.
Okay.
Oh, we're good.
All right, so I'm going to be quiet and let you keep going. On that remediation, the trash bags, that's a great idea, because I've had patients like that. They're just totally exhausted, so brain fogged, and this is so emotionally taxing, too.
It is.
And it's their favorite photo albums or yearbooks
or
whatever. Put it in a trash bag, seal it up, figure it out later.
Exactly. And And that goes back to how to make these decisions. And my advice is to just be gentle and kind and understanding with each other, because when you're dealing with a family and maybe mm-hmm. there's only one person who's sick and everyone else is like, well, why do we have to move, or well, this isn't affecting,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
it can really cause a lot of conflict, a lot of stress. And
yeah.
even if everyone is understanding and on board, the person who's sick is so overwhelmed and not able to make the decisions
mm-hmm.
or not physically able to do everything that's involved in moving or remediating, because
mm-hmm.
it's overwhelming for a person who's healthy, let alone someone who's barely getting by.
Yeah. And just another great reason to really nail the diagnosis early on, even
right.
if you have to spend a little extra money if your insurance doesn't cover that blood work,
right.
really nailing that and proving this thing out.
Because, mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't know for sure and you try to start walking this out, that's going to be tough.
It is. It can be really overwhelming. But just kind of go back to those basics.
Yep.
Remove the source of exposure. Remove the toxins and address the inflammation and however
mm-hmm.
that's specific for each individual patient. But things that are just helpful, I think, in general, is keeping up with the four pillars.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally, the most challenging of those for me has always been movement
mm-hmm.
because of the energy levels, especially
yeah.
when I was at my lowest and struggling. Just to get up and wash the dishes was a challenge, let alone considering exercising. That was not I just couldn't even fathom that because I was so exhausted. So something that I found that can be not a replacement, but at least a temporary substitute that's helping with that is sauna.
Yeah.
At least then there's the body sweating
mm-hmm.
without exerting physically
mm-hmm.
and really just causing more inflammation and fatigue that can come from exercise. Manual lymphatic treatments I found have also been really helpful, especially if, you know, that's the way to move the lymph is to physically move the body. And if we're exhausted and can't move, that is a way to help address that as well. Epsom salt soaks are very helpful, especially if someone's dealing with the pain and so forth,
mm-hmm.
that can go along with that. It can also be detox too, and can sweat as well. Acupuncture I've found to be very helpful, intermittent fasting, and, you know, maybe an extended fast, and that can be individualized a little bit, and
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of tread lightly on that and be, you know, wise about who that's helping and who it's not.
Yeah.
Sun exposure, you mentioned air purifiers, which are always helpful, and a supplement that I found at times when I was struggling was molecular hydrogen.
Mm.
It can address that oxidative stress
mm-hmm.
and without having side effects.
Yeah. Great. It's really, really good. So if they've done the first two, and now we're into these blood markers, it could be elevated that you mentioned, you went through all the acronyms, ADH and MMP9 and VEGF and some of these others. I don't know how much detail for each one versus more broadly,
mm-hmm.
but to give the listeners an idea, you know, generally what that would look like, time-wise, protocol-wise, cost-wise.
Okay, sure. If you look at that Shoemaker protocol, starting at the bottom of that pyramid and working up, the base of that, like I said, is for everyone, avoiding the exposure and removing the toxins. And as you move up that, it's addressing each one of those biomarkers. And you only address the ones that are out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So every step isn't necessarily going to be used by every patient. So you can skip the ones that, say, for example, if VEGF was normal, you can skip that step on the protocol. Some of these are addressed fairly simply with maybe a dietary intervention. For example, a gluten-free diet is one of the interventions that can address one of those areas of inflammation. some of them can be addressed with a supplement protocol. For example, one of my inflammatory markers that has consistently been elevated is MMP9. And the protocol for that is a low amylose or low starch diet, a high dose fish oil supplement, and an herbal supplement that's a Boswellia complex that has turmeric in it. And that has been used to address that. For me in particular, that has kind of been up and down. We're still kind of working on that one. So each kind of marker that's out of balance can be addressed differently. Mm-hmm. The one at the very top of that is called VIP, and that one is addressed with a compounded prescription that's a nasal spray, and that is the one that has been shown to treat the brain. It's unfortunately fairly expensive, and because it's compounded, insurance generally doesn't cover that. And it's a nasal spray that has to be refrigerated and used multiple times a day, so it's not always super mm-hmm. convenient either. But that is the one that has been shown to affect the genetic expression of some of these genes and also treating the brain. So that one is a little more complicated
right.
than just avoiding gluten in your diet.
Yeah. But that's at the very top of the pyramid.
Yeah.
And by the time you're there, I mean, you're so close. You've been down this road. Kind of give the audience an idea. I mean, for you, sick for 30 plus years, you know, started working this protocol. Should people expect, of course, everybody's different and unique, but in general, mm-hmm. Someone who's been chronically sick, say 10 plus years, and they start working this protocol, should they expect, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, 5 years, you know, that took them 10 years to get here? Will it take 5 years to recover or what?
And it's variable, I think, just because of where everybody is and how long they have been dealing with this. So I would think some people can see really impressive improvements within 6 months. And I saw improvements enough to be much more functional within that time frame. But I've been following this for over 2 years now, and I'm still addressing some things. But I also know that I'm so incredibly reactive and sensitive. Any little minuscule exposure sets me back.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing I have to be super diligent about, is making sure if I have any little bit of exposure, I'm back on full dose of binders mm-hmm. and addressing things, because it can set me back not only days, but potentially months.
Right.
So everybody is a little different, but I know that I react to what are called MVOCs, the microbial volatile organic compounds. You can think VOCs like the fumes and paints,
mm-hmm.
but microbes give off these VOCs also, and mm-hmm. I know I'm reactive to those because I can tell within minutes of being exposed to something that it's problematic,
mm-hmm.
which is a blessing and a curse.
mm-hmm.
Complicated, it makes life challenging,
mm-hmm.
but it's also like an early warning system that my body's telling me, get out, avoid
right.
this.
Right.
Which is kind of goes back to that, where everybody should be screened to mm-hmm. know if they're sensitive or not.
Right. And just overall, I think you mentioned on the first show, but from where you were to where you are, percent-wise, what would you say improvement? Are you from your worst?
Yeah. At my very worst, when I was debilitated, flattened, and completely non-functional, I'm at least 80% better. There's still some minor things I'm working on, mm-hmm. but my two primary symptoms that were the most difficult in order to function on a daily basis were fatigue and headaches. I had a ton of the other symptoms, but I can function in daily life with most of those. But it was the fatigue and the headaches, and those have gotten significantly better. But if I have an exposure, mm-hmm. it significantly sets me back.
Right. Okay. Well, great job.
Thank you.
I mean, it takes a lot of dedication and effort and stick-to-itiveness and I think really, to me, which is what we'll get into some tomorrow night, but on the spiritual side too, you know, without being grounded in your faith and knowing, because God, as I recall, showed you early on, basically be, you know, he's going to take care of you.
Right.
Just be patient, and boy, were you. And you've come a long ways, and an encouragement to a lot of listeners, I think. So,
thank you.
Great job. Thank you for sharing all your wisdom and your experience. And I know it's going to help a lot of people not have to walk as far down that road that you had to walk down. So,
thank you. I appreciate it. Yes, God is good. He showed me to trust Him and that He would show me. And He did. And I hope it's helpful and opens people's eyes to this as a possibility so they don't have to suffer for decades before they realize what's going on.
Yeah. And just real quick, I know we got to wrap this up. The surge practitioners that specialize in this, is that through Shoemaker's website?
Yes. Okay. He has a training program where he has trained practitioners, and there's a link on the website, and they're scattered all over the country, and some of them do see patients virtually, so that might open up some more doors instead of traveling.
Right. All right, guys, so survivingmold.com, that's a website that we've been referring to throughout the show, and that's where you can find a lot of this information, the online screening test, and a practitioner who's specialized in this if you feel like that's the direction you need to go. Also, the testing of your home, that's all on there, so go check out that survivingmold.com. All right, another great show. Thank you, Wade, for having us. Everybody, veritasmedical.com, you can find this show archived there. Go listen to Angie's first episode 2 or 3 weeks back. Also on iTunes under You're the Cure. We'll be back next week with another great show. Thank y'all for tuning in. I'm Ben Edwards, You're the Cure.
And you've been listening to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out veritasmedical.com for archived shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's veritasmedical.com.